You're listening to the Maryland Baseball Network podcast. Here are your hosts, Nathan Schwartz and Jack Suzanin. Welcome to episode 95 of the Maryland Baseball Network podcast. I'm Nathan Schwartz with Jack Suzanin. Episode 2 here of the 2024 season, Jack. And the Dirty Terps are off to a 3-1 start.
Can't ask for much more than that. Obviously, we would have liked the sweep at Georgia Southern, but cannot ask for much more than 3-1 to start the year. I think most people would have absolutely taken that.
Yeah, no doubt about that. First series under new head coach Matt Swope. It started off with a great come-from-behind win, a 5-4 win on Friday night, and then a dominant 7-1 win on Saturday before dropping that series finale on Sunday, and then a mammoth midweek win over Mount St. Mary's on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's been a solid week for the Dirty Terps. Obviously, the Friday opening night game, I think, was, again, we've talked last week about entertainment quality games. I think that was one of the more entertaining games I've seen. Just staying fighting. It was a really, really fun watch. I know you had a lot of fun down there in Statesboro on the call. And then Saturday, of course, was the big win. Just a really, really good win. It was obviously a really, really good weekend for the Terps. Sunday, of course, you can't win them all.
Right.
Not going to complain too much. But Tuesday, the midweek against Mount St. Mary's, I mean, my goodness, those bats just came alive.
It sure did, and it fits the theme that we've seen from this Maryland team over the last couple years, and that this team is never going to give up. Friday night, we can focus in on that game first. Down 3-0 going into the top of the sixth inning, they start clawing away, and then Jacob Orr, out of anybody in that lineup, so much power in that 1-9 for the Terps. He hits the first homer of the year for Maryland in the seventh inning. His first homer of the season comes in the season opener in back-to-back years. He's the guy that really brought Maryland back to life on Friday night before Devin Russell hits the game-tying single. Sam Honar hits the game-winning sacrifice fly. And Nate Haberthier gets the save in Game 1 of 2024.
Yeah, and again, it was just a really entertaining game. The offense just wasn't firing on all cylinders to start the game. Gotta give a ton of credit to Thomas Higgins, Georgia Southern starter. He was fantastic.
First time he had pitched in almost 2 years at the collegiate level.
I think he had Tommy John last
year, was it? Yeah. There were so many people on that Georgia Southern roster that had Tommy John surgery. There was at least 6 or 7 that I counted that were coming back from Tommy John surgery, and then a couple more that are going through it right now.
Wow. He pitched really well, but again, just keep fighting. They obviously weren't going to keep Higgins in forever, and then once the bullpen came in, Maryland started to strike. That's been a problem for Georgia Southern over the last couple years, has been their bullpen. That's probably been their Achilles heel. But again, this lineup is, we've talked about it before, just so dangerous 1-9. Everybody can hurt you. And, you know, it was a guy, Jacob Orr, who we, honestly, both of us, didn't fully expect to have a starting role. We sort of thought Jordan Crossland might get that starting spot. And lo and behold, Orr comes in. He's the starting right fielder on opening night and the opening series, and he had a really, really good weekend.
Yeah, he was one of the most notable guys for the Terps. He was 4-for-10 over the weekend with a homer and 4 RBIs in total. He drew 2 walks as well. I want to talk about Kenny Lippman also for a second. He settled in pretty nicely, in my opinion. The lone thing with him was the walks. He had 5 in 4 innings. Other than that, he was pretty much perfect. Only 1 hit allowed, 2 unearned runs, struck out 5 through 76 pitches. So it's clear they're not going to try and maximize his pitch count right away. They're going to ease him into a role and condition his arm going into the rest of the season. Then Logan Barrier comes in and is also fantastic in relief, giving the Terps 4 innings.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. He had 1 pitch. I think it was like a little sinker he threw. That was maybe the most wizard-like pitch I've ever seen a Maryland pitcher throw. But yeah, no, the entire pitching staff, again, all weekend was really good. But on Friday night, again, it was so good to see Kenny. You know, we don't know how he's going to be in that Friday night role, especially after being in the bullpen role last year. And he pitched really, really well on Friday night. Obviously, no earned runs. Again, the walk's a bit of a concern, but I don't think it's a long-term concern. He didn't have a walk problem last year. But obviously, again, not ideal, but hey, he's getting outs. He's not letting runners cross the plate too often, except for those little error runs that, again, happen. A really good outing from Kenny Lippman, and then Barrier was phenomenal coming out of the pen, and I think it was an interesting strategy that they used all week, and I'm just letting these guys ride, which it worked. I mean, obviously, you can't hurt it if it works. Obviously, they used McManus like that on Saturday, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
The conditioning is big for pitchers early in the season. The longest outing for a Maryland pitcher in these first four games has been Ryan Van Buren, going 5 2/3 innings with the midweek start, a career best for him, and he was really efficient in those first couple innings. We can dive into that a little bit later on. But you get four from Lippman, four from Barrier in game one. The lineup figured it out as the game went on, hopping on those bullpen arms quickly. And then Braden Martin, we expected him to start in right field to begin the season. He slots over to left field and then makes a full sprint over to the left field corner to corral in the final out on Friday night in what could have been a ball that brought in the tying run for Georgia Southern.
Yeah, it probably would have been. If you listen to the podcast last week, we said Braden Martin can fly, and he showed it on that play. It was an unbelievable play, and you got to remember, he was supposed to play right field, but he's not even an outfielder. He's a natural like shortstop. So
middle infield guy through and through.
So the fact that he's making plays like that in the outfield, two outs, bottom of the ninth, game-saving catch, I mean, that's such a good sign for Maryland defensively. They had a pretty solid defensive series overall. Those couple Honar blips in the second game hurt a little bit. But overall, a very solid defensive series for Maryland. Again, and a couple players who are playing positions that they're not necessarily used to.
Martin also had his first career hit on Friday night. A lot of career and Terp firsts over the weekend. We had Jordan Crossland had his first career hit yesterday. Braden Martin had his first career hit on Friday. Chris Akopian's first career hit came in a big way on Saturday with that two-run homer. A bunch of Terp debuts on the mound. Freshman Duke McCarron, Joey McManus, Evan Smith all got in there for the first time in their collegiate careers. Logan Barrier, another one of these Terp transfers to make his first appearance in a Maryland uniform. It was really fun to see all these new guys, this revamped, reloaded Terp squad, play such a big role in the weekend. Two wins and then the win on Tuesday against Mount St. Mary's. Let's dive into this Saturday game now. 7-1. And from the third inning on, it just felt like Maryland was going to run away with this game completely. Logan Koster settled in really nicely in his first start. He only threw 63 pitches, and this is a guy we expect to go longer into games as the season goes on. So another one of these conditioning aspects for the early season in the Maryland pitching staff. Gives up one earned run on three hits. Not the biggest strikeout guy, only two. And then Joey McManus, the true freshman, comes in pumping 93 with that fastball from the right side. Four innings of shutout baseball, and he only gives up one hit.
Yeah, that was, you know, an unbelievable pitching performance from both Koster and McManus. Then Sarcone came in and shut the door in the ninth really well. But, yeah, they're both, again, like you said, for Koster especially, he's going to be a longer, you know, term guy. He's not going to be a four-inning 63-pitch guy every outing. He's going to, you know, go longer into games. We saw what he did at GW and expect him to do the same here. But again, it's that thing. If you can get these long outings from relievers, that's huge. That means that can spread you out. That means you want to kill your bullpen in one game on the weekend. So that's big. And I think especially for a guy like McManus or Duke McCarron, I would think they're hoping to develop those two as starters. And if you can get them four innings, you know, 67 pitches, that's a starter's workload almost. It's more than a starter's workload on Saturday. I mean, he threw four more pitches than Koster. And one hit ball, two strikeouts, three walks is a bit concerning, but not the end of the world. He pitched really, really well, and it was an exciting outing to see for Terps fans.
And keep in mind, the roles on this pitching staff are nothing but final yet. I mean, other than Kenny Lippman being the Friday night guy, which we expect to go throughout the remainder of the season, there's a lot of question marks still remaining. When you have guys like Logan Barrier and Joey McManus throwing four innings in relief, you have Tristan Sarcone and Omar Melendez in your bullpen as well. There's a ton of guys that can slide into that Sunday role. Ryan Van Buren's name, I'm sure if he continues to have performances like he did on Tuesday, that could become a question mark whether he slots into the Sunday role. who could slide into midweek roles. There's going to be multiple midweeks this upcoming week against Georgetown and VCU. Somebody's got to start that second midweek. I mean, there's so many options for Maryland, Matt Swope, Jimmy Jackson to decide who's going to get the ball, something that just hasn't been there, that depth that's been lacking over the last 3 years.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting, obviously, who gets the ball that second midweek. Obviously, we don't know yet, and it's a long way away. But it's just, it's so fascinating with this team, the pitching options. And again, it's something that Maryland hasn't had.
Yeah.
This is, you know, it's sort of a new thing, and it's a very, very exciting thing. And we're going to do our award predictions for Maryland later on in the show, but there are probably five guys we could pick for Pitcher of the Year. And it's a very valid argument. But yeah, again, Koster, McManus, Sarcone on Saturday were fantastic. And even if Mead Johnson didn't have his best stuff on Sunday, I still think he's got the potential to be very good.
The big thing with Johnson is locating his pitches. He's got the stuff. He's got a great mix. But he was just leaving the ball a little too high over the weekend. You got to remember, it was his first Division I start.
Exactly.
Spent the last 2 years at the JUCO level. Comes in against a really good Georgia Southern team. You got to give them credit. A really good group led by Rodney Hennen. The Sun Belt is a great baseball conference. That's a multi-bid conference.
At least two.
So to go in there, a team that is another one of those teams in the landscape of the NCAA, reloading through the transfer portal, having a couple guys come back, and an Eagle team that's riddled with injuries too. So the fact that Johnson had some struggles is nothing to worry about after just one game. Homers for the Terps in that Saturday game. We talked about Hakopian, deep left center field for him. And then Alex Colarco, 111 off the bat for the junior transfer. And I believe it went about 430 feet out there beyond the tall wall in right field. If you were watching the ESPN Plus broadcast, you saw how tall that wall was, probably about three bob walls stacked on top of
Pretty much, another.
And he lifted that homer over that wall, no problem. That's the power that I feel like has been just harnessed for him in his first 2 years at Northwestern and should just explode in year three of college baseball.
Yeah, Matt Swope has said multiple times throughout the offseason he has no idea how Colarco only hit four homers last year for Northwestern. And to be quite honest, I agree with him because you just look at Colarco, he's huge. He's what, he's 6'5"?
6'5", I think. I'm double-checking on that.
He's a massive human being. He's got power from both sides, can get on base from both sides. I think we saw that maybe a bit more than we expected. He got a bunch of singles and doubles over the course of this week.
Now he was spraying the ball everywhere, both from the left and the right side. Great discipline from both sides. Struck out a lot over the weekend, but that might just be something like pitch selection. That's a big thing for Matt Swope and coaching all these players up is you got to swing at the right pitches. And you got to remember with Colarco, he didn't see any live pitching in the fall. So this the last 3 or 4 weeks of the spring for him have been seeing live pitching for the first time. So expect some struggles early on. But he settled in pretty nicely, if you ask me, considering that was the first time he's seen live pitching against other opponents in at least a year.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. He played, you know, he had a really good weekend, and he's going to be exciting to see that continued progression. Obviously, he's going to get some time in the field, too. That'll be fun when that happens. But I think his power is going to continue to blossom throughout the year, especially when he plays more at the Bob, obviously. You know,
I think he's going to hit quite a few home runs.
I think a guy who's 6'5" with the power he has is going to hit a lot of homers at the Bob. It's a hitter-friendly park, that's for sure.
No doubt about that. We can talk briefly about this Sunday game, the 7-3 loss. Mentioned Mead Johnson struggled. He went 3 1/3, gave up 5 earned runs on 4 hits. Another walk, riddled day for a Maryland starter. He had 5 as well. To Lippman's 5 and 4 strikeouts. And this is where you started to see some debuts come in after Mead Johnson. Alex Walsh, the transfer from Lafayette, comes in, gives up 2 runs in 2 2/3 of innings. And then Evan Smith and Duke McCarron, 2 freshmen, come in, each throw a scoreless inning. to round out the day for Maryland. And it seems like the names of Andrew Johnson and Logan Ott, the guys that we saw a lot last year, are going to be pushed to maybe towards the back end of this bullpen with the performances that we saw from the three freshmen, McCarron, McManus, Smith, and the transfers such as Sarcone, Walsh, and Barrier.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a crazy thing because Johnson and Ott aren't necessarily bad pitchers. They're both, you know, talented. Johnson had a really good outing in the regional against Northeastern last year and locked that game down for Maryland and was trusted really heavily.
Really good down the stretch in conference play.
Really, really good. But again, that shows the depth that this team has. You know, Johnson is a guy who could be a candidate to start the next midweek game, or he could be a candidate to not pitch unless it's like a 10-0 blowout. It's just a fascinating thing to look at because, again, these are Ott and Johnson are two talented lefties. Maryland doesn't have a ton of left-handed options out of the bullpen. And, yeah, it's just fascinating to see.
We also didn't see Garrett French over the weekend dealing with a bit of an illness. Expect to see him this weekend down in Texas, Jack. You'll be in Corpus Christi. This three-game set featuring Texas A&M Corpus Christi, of course, the host, and then Pitt on Saturday, Washington on Sunday. This is going to be a big test for Maryland, and a lot of the depth that we saw over the weekend could be put to the ringer against three really good teams, especially Washington on Sunday.
Yeah, and there are three teams who had wildly different weekends last weekend. We can jump right into just talking about these teams. So starting off, against Corpus Christi on Friday. Obviously, when you think this is a team in the Southland, they're picked to finish near the bottom of the Southland. This is a team Maryland should be beating. But, and I know everyone's going to say how much they hate when I say but Matthew Watson is probably going to get the start for Corpus Christi. Redshirt junior righty started the first game against Central Michigan for the Islanders. They went 2-2 over the weekend. They beat Central Michigan twice and then lost to Stephen F. Austin twice. It was like a little three-team tournament Stephen F. Austin hosted. Pitched against Central Michigan, 5 1/3, 3 hits, 1 run. It was unearned, and 9 strikeouts. So this guy can get strikeouts. He is a transfer from Eastern Oklahoma State College, which there are a ton of.
That's a mouthful.
Eastern Oklahoma State College transfers. Their assistant coach, I believe it is, if you give me 1 second, Scott Kelly, their pitching coach, is an Eastern Oklahoma State guy, it wasn't Scott Kelly. It was their other assistant, Matt Parker, who was in Eastern Oklahoma. He was the head man at Eastern Oklahoma State. Brought a ton of transfers with him to Corpus Christi. This Corpus Christi team is full of JUCO guys. I can't even give you the exact number, but it's close to like 30 JUCO guys, which is awesome to see. But Watson, last year he pitched for Corpus Christi. He was 6-5. 5.51 ERA, 54 strikeouts in 78 1/3 innings pitched. But last summer, he pitched for the Orleans Firebirds in the Cape. Went 2-0, 1.38 ERA, 6 strikeouts in 13 innings of work.
It's pretty good for summer ball.
That's really good in the Cape, where you're facing the best of the best at the dish. So he's something one Maryland's going to have to look out for. The offense isn't great. For Corpus Christi, they're highlighted by Isaac Webb, a transfer from Arkansas. He didn't play at Arkansas last season. Fourth college in 4 years for Isaac Webb. Started his career at Grayson College, then went to Eastern Oklahoma State, and then went to Arkansas. Decided to try and test himself at the SEC level. Didn't really work out for him. Started all 4 games over the weekend for the Islanders, went 8-for-21 with 5 RBIs. So, again, this is a dangerous, dangerous team. You know, a team that probably isn't great and definitely Maryland should be beating, but you can't overlook them. They've got some talent.
seems like Maryland's going to be tested over the weekend, and it's going to be really interesting to see how the Terps shake out in another one of these early season tournaments, because if you remember last year, Maryland went up to Minnesota to play U.S. Bank Stadium in the Cambria College Classic between Maryland, Ole Miss, Hawaii, Vanderbilt, Nebraska was there as well, and of course the host Minnesota. And Maryland lost all three of those games, faced Ole Miss on Friday night, a team they had played the weekend before, and won one of three down in Oxford, lost 5-1 on that Friday in that opening night of the tournament, get walked off by Vanderbilt on Saturday, a real heartbreaker there, and then get blown out by Hawaii on Sunday morning. So last year's showing in a tournament wasn't great. The year before, they played down in Greenville in a tournament and lost 2-3. So how do you shake up? It's so hard to scout these guys when you only know you're facing them for one game. It's essentially three midweek games in a row, but they're not your usual midweek opponents. It's teams you could be playing three-game series against, and you don't exactly know what the strategy is going to be with certain matchups. Maybe Washington, for example, throws their Friday guy on Sunday just because they feel like they want him to throw against a more potent Maryland lineup, and you could do that for Pitt. You could do that for Corpus Christi as well. Mm-hmm. I don't think Maryland's going to do that necessarily and switch out just because there's already so much unknown. You don't want to mix it up. But it's really interesting what these tournaments can bring to light, and I'm excited to see Maryland go up against this level of competition.
Yeah, and again, it's a really, really high level. Washington, a really good team. Pitt went down to Florida last weekend and swept a really good Maine team. A very, very
led by Zach, former Terp Zach Martin, and Jeremiah
had
Jenkins.
Had a really good weekend, which we're all happy for Zach. He's a really good kid, and we're pulling for him. But they went down, swept Maine 10-7, 7-4, and 13-3. So this Pitt team, which was picked to finish near the bottom of the ACC, all of a sudden they beat a mid-major who probably has a chance to win the America East and make a push at the NCAA tournament. So again, this is a dangerous team. Their second game starter was Ryan Reed. Don't know for sure if we're going to see him. He's a sophomore lefty out of Ridley Park, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia. And it's going to be interesting to see this Pitt lineup. They're led by Jaden Melendez, who hit 500 on the weekend, started all at three games for Pitt. Another interesting thing that I just remembered to say about this weekend, Pitt and Washington both are not playing midweeks this week. Corpus Christi played four games over the weekend, and then it's playing two midweeks.
Wow.
So Maryland will be Corpus Christi's seventh game. This is
That's
a team
wild.
That, you know, has a pretty good idea already of what they're looking like because they've played so many games. Versus Pitt and Washington. Washington will say they've played three games, but they've basically played four after playing, what was it, 17 innings
against Long Beach State. You might have seen on social media they tied because there was a travel curfew. Washington had to catch a flight back home, and they couldn't get the full game in on Sunday afternoon. So they're 0-2-1, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's a funky record.
Baseball prep.
That happened to Nebraska last year. I know when we played them in the regular season, they had a tie on their schedule as well. But Washington, a really good team. We can't just say that Maryland's going to look them over because they didn't win a game in the opening weekend. That's a regional team from last year.
It's a regional team from last year, and Long Beach State is also a really good team that they played out there. I was watching that series. You know, Long Beach's bullpen is named the Jared Weaver Bullpen.
Really?
Yeah.
How about that?
Interesting. I did not realize that, and that was pretty cool.
Former Angel.
I love seeing all the former MLB players, like their names on college stands. Like University of Illinois Chicago, their ballpark, which is one of the most beautiful ballparks I think I've ever seen. If you haven't seen UIC's ballpark, give it a look. The batter's eye is the skyline of Chicago. It's beautiful. Their stadium is named, I believe, Curtis Granderson Stadium, which, again, wild.
Ohio State has Nick Swisher Field.
Yep.
Maryland was there last year.
Yeah, I mean, we could keep going on and on about these random MLB players, but Yeah, Washington, again, a team that Maryland does not want to look over.
All right, before Maryland heads down to Texas this weekend, there was a midweek against Mount St. Mary's. Started off with a bang, ended with a bang. Everything in the middle was kind of meh, just in terms of I'm a guy, I love runs. I love seeing offense. I'm always down to see good offense paired with good pitching, and that's exactly what happened for Maryland on Tuesday. Sixth spot in the bottom of the first inning. Back-to-back RBI doubles from Chris Akopian in his first at-bat at the Bob, and then Sam Honar in his first at-bat at the Bob in the regular season. He had a couple in the fall game versus Virginia. He laced an RBI double as well. Calarco with a sac fly, and then Braden Martin, an opposite field bases-clearing double off a diving glove of Aiden Tierney, the Mountaineers' left fielder, and everybody showed off their speed on that one, giving Van Buren everything he needed in just three outs, and then Van Buren goes on to have a career-best performance. Final numbers for him, he got the win. He went 5 2/3 innings. That's a career high. Four hits, only one earned run, two walks, and four strikeouts. He just fell shy of his career mark in pitches of 81. He had 79 yesterday. So if Maryland can get this kind of production from Van Buren going all the way through, they'll be in a really good spot. And Matt Swope said after the game, this is the kind of midweek start they've been waiting for years now. And to get it in midweek number one has to be such a good feeling for this group.
Yeah, I mean, again, they haven't had a midweek guy, and it's so important because more often than not in a regional, you're going to need a four starter to pitch. You can't just rely on your three weekend guys. And Van Buren, again, a heck of a performance. You read his line. His stuff was looking really good, more sync towards the end of it. But what was interesting to me was the lineup. They switched it up from what they had done against Georgia Southern. Eddie Hakopian leading off. Braden Martin goes to the nine spot. Keister up in the two hole. And Jordan Crossland came into the lineup for Jacob Orr, which I thought was interesting. What do you think about this lineup? What direction do you see it going? Because I have no idea.
See, I was a much bigger fan of this lineup than I was with the lineup over the weekend. Because
this lineup scored 14 runs.
It's not only that they scored 14 runs. I think just sliding everybody into those spots specifically just flowed a lot better. To have a true freshman be your leadoff guy in his first collegiate at-bats, I just thought it was too much pressure for Martin. And he performed relatively well over the weekend defensively, struggled a little bit at the plate to get going, a couple strikeouts for him. And it's just something to where you build all this momentum towards the beginning of the season, and there you are, game one, and it's a true freshman for his first collegiate at-bat starting your season off. I just thought it was too much for Martin, and then Chris Akopian in the two spot to have two freshmen back-to-back. I thought that was a bold move by Coach Swope. I didn't have necessarily any problems with the lineup. I just would have liked to see a little less pressure put on those freshmen right away.
Yeah.
But then when you have the lineup on Tuesday with Eddie Akopian leading off for the first time in a Maryland uniform, Kevin Keister slotting into that two spot, Chris Akopian batting third, that's a money 1-2-3. Two guys with a lot of experience that are able to get on base a good amount of the time. Kevin Keister had the fifth most walks in Maryland history in a single season last year. Eddie Akopian walked three times yesterday and also had a couple base hits as well. When you have two veterans that have been here at the top of the lineup, it sets the tone for the rest of the seven guys in the lineup. And then you can kind of mess around. It was a similar structure the rest of the way. You had Hakopian third, Honar fourth, Calarco fifth. And that's a really good 3-4-5 right there. All guys that have power boosts and that are probably each going to hit at least 10 home runs this year. So when you stack it like that and put guys that are, you know, you're going to trust them to get on base, followed by the power, and then you slide the younger guys like Russell and Martin and Crossland down in the lineup and maybe get them some better pitches to hit. I thought that was a really good adjustment by Coach Swope, and I'd expect to see some variation of this version of the lineup over the weekend in Texas.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there about just that shuffle. But we got to talk about Devin Russell. Huge, huge homer for him. His first homer at the Bob in his career, had the homer against UMBC last year. This is the power we know he has. He, I think, had, what was it in the fall, 12 homers, something like that?
10, 11, 12. It was double digits.
Which is unbelievable. This guy has a ton of power and is going to hit a ton of homers. And he's going to be okay replacing Luke Schlueger. All will be fine.
I think he'll settle in just fine.
But, yeah, the power is there. You can put it in the middle of the lineup. You can put it at the end of the lineup. I wouldn't put him near the top of the lineup, but if you want to hit him at the top of the lineup, sure, you can hit for power there too. Just a very exciting young player for Maryland.
Mammoth home run yesterday.
Yeah, smoked it.
To left center field.
I do want to say, our good friend Alana Renbaum did tweet this. I whispered to her right before the pitch was thrown. I said, he's going yard right now.
And he did.
He did. I don't want to say, I don't want to be the guy to toot my own horn saying I called it, but I did.
You also got a little jump scare with a foul ball yesterday's game.
That was an interesting one for those who saw the game. I got out of class and made my way immediately to the Bob for the last couple innings. Was sitting front row, our good friend Tyler Lochte, who is begging to come on this podcast, by the way, and we'll see if we can get him on. But he demanded we sit front row because he wanted to be on the broadcast. There was a foul ball hit a couple pitches before the one you're talking about that was on the ground, and Tyler still flinched. And I was ready to make a play, just so we are clear. I was ready to make a play there. And then that one came a couple pitches later. And look, it wasn't the best moment for me. But that thing was flying at my face.
It went straight to your head.
I mean, it was flying. But my hands were up. Would there have been no screen, I would have been in position to make a play. I'm not going to say I would have made the play. I know Ben Reitman said on the Big Ten Plus broadcast that I wasn't going to make a play, but I was ready to make a play, hypothetically.
Your hands were right there. I mean, the reaction time, I thought it was a personal best for you.
I thought it was a pretty solid effort for me, but, you know, there's a reason I'm a broadcaster, so let's not guarantee it that a play would have been made.
We won't guarantee it, but, you know, there's only one way to find out, right? Got to get you on the diamond.
No, we don't. Let's leave that to the team.
Okay. All right, so that about recaps everything that happened for Maryland over the weekend and in the middle of the week. A 3-1 start, a very sound start to this season for the Dirty Terps before they head to Texas for 3 games. This weekend, 2 midweeks next week as well. We'll have to think about how we're going to do the podcast next week because I'll be down in Richmond.
Is this when we put Tyler Lochte
on? It might be. It might be an early appearance for Mr. Friday Night as he's donned himself.
He's doing 2 Friday Night games for us, and he's dubbed himself Mr. Friday Night.
I'll allow it.
Sure.
All right, so final topic on the agenda today. We're going to predict some team awards. We don't really have a structure for this. We don't really have an idea of what awards we're going to do, but we're just going to freelance. We're going to freeball it. We're going to start with MVP. Let's go easy.
That's a good one to start with. I'm going to go Eddie Hacopian. I think if he's at the top of the lineup, which, you know, he was at the midweek, and his bat, he can hit for power, he can hit for average, he walks a lot, he can do everything at the plate, really good defensively at first. If they need to play him at second, pretty much anywhere in the field he can play, maybe other than like center. I'm going to say Eddie Hacopian.
Really good start to that. I mean, he's had a great beginning of this season. 6-for-13, that's a .462 average in the first 4 games. 2 doubles, 2 RBI, 4 walks. He's only struck out 3 times. He's been Maryland's best hitter over these first 4 games.
Is it cheating that we're doing this a week into the season?
I don't think so.
Okay, cool.
It's early. They play a long season. You know, if it was football and you were doing this 2 weeks in,
it's a bit of a different story.
They only play 12 games. Baseball, you play 55.
Yeah.
In the regular season, and then you play the tournament and the regionals. So I think it's fine we're doing this after game four.
Sure, let's do it.
I'm going to go with an obvious guess. I'm going to go Kevin Keister. Maryland's captain this year. Only 3 hits in the first 4 games for him, hitting 188 through the first 4. Did have an RBI in the season opener that drove in the first run of the year for Maryland. And his defense is going to be great. He's going to transition quickly from that second base spot to shortstop. He came in to Maryland as a shortstop, and it's only gotten – he's only going to get better with more reps at the shortstop position. He's been taking the reps at short all throughout the fall and the spring, and I expect the bat to heat up. He's also a guy that's going to continuously get on base, whether he gets hit, whether he draws walks, whether he finds other ways to drive people in. He's going to do it all for Maryland this year. So Maryland's number 3 gets my vote for MVP.
That's a good pick. Let's think of a next award to go with. Do we want to do a fun one or a baseball one?
Fun. Let's keep it fun.
Let's keep it fun. All right. Here's what I was just thinking about. Best walk-up song on the team. We've only had one home game, so we haven't seen everybody's walk-up song, but best walk-up song on the team that you saw yesterday.
I mean, Sam Honar. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's really revival, and he is a musician, and he plays that song himself really well.
That's the last one he performs every set he does.
So just here, I didn't know that was going to be his walk-up song. And then
I remembered it from Iowa City. That was my first thought when he committed, because that was his walk-up in Iowa, too. And I was very excited.
When I heard that for the first time in the first inning on Tuesday, I was like, this is going to be the highlight. Mm-hmm. We got to get the Bob to start singing that.
Oh, the dugout was singing it.
Good.
I was noticing that.
I didn't hear that, but that's good. That's great to hear.
I wasn't here for this part, so you're going to have to confirm. Did Ryan Van Buren come out to Mr. Rager by Kid Cudi? Because he posted that on Instagram.
I want to say yes. I wasn't really paying attention.
That's also Phillies pitcher Ranger Suarez's walk-up song, and Ryan Van Buren, a big Phillies fan from the Philadelphia area. So I'm going to go with Ryan, although I'm really going with Sam. I'm just picking somebody else so I don't pick the same guy that you picked.
Man, my mic fell off. Yeah. I'm trying to get it back on the stand.
There you go. You're getting there.
There we go. I think we got it.
All right.
Okay.
Why don't you come up with our next award?
Let's go Pitcher of the Year. You come up with the fun ones, I'll come up with the basic ones.
I'll come up with the fun ones. I'm going to go Logan Koster. I feel like most reliable, just long-term. Maybe he's not going to be the flashiest guy in terms of big strikeouts. But I think I'm going to go Koster just based on reliability, and I think he's going to have the best numbers, ERA, and innings pitched-wise by the end of the year.
Yeah, we know each other so well. Logan Koster's my pick as well. Coming over from George Washington, a ton of experience. I think he could start Friday nights for Maryland if it comes to that. Great mix. 5 pitches. That's what you need if you're going to be a starting pitcher, not only at the collegiate level, but also when you get up to the pros. The more pitches you have, the better. The more variety you have in your arsenal, I think the more opportunity you have to succeed. And we didn't even see him scratch the surface of what he could do. He only threw 63 pitches in that game on Saturday, those 4 innings. I expect him, if he does pitch this Saturday against Pitt, to maybe go into the 5th or the 6th inning.
Yeah, I mean, we both said it. We both think Koster's going to be electric. We just hope that TV commentators around the country will get his name right. It's pronounced Koster. It is not Coaster.
Koster.
There's your PSA.
I don't mean to throw anybody under the bus, but, man, the Georgia Southern PA announcer over the weekend was not good.
It's unfortunate.
Hannah Kapakopian, he said probably about 8 different versions of the name Hakopian.
Well,
and he just couldn't get it right.
Especially with 2 of them on the team now,
you have to get it right. I've got nothing against him. He did overall an okay job, but like you got to figure that out. Got to figure it out.
All right. Next fun one. This is going to be a weird one. I don't know what I'm titling this. Biggest potential to do the best bat flip.
Ooh, okay. See, there's so many different options here, right? Because, I mean, you think the high-energy guys on this team. Eddie Hakopian has a lot of energy. He always fires a fist when he comes off first base. Chris Akopian, I think, is going to hit the furthest home run of the season. So that could give you a chance for the most no-doubt bat flip. Mm-hmm. Same with Devin Russell. But I think it's going to be from Elijah Lambros.
Yeah.
Personally. Either him or Clarko. I feel like both of those guys are going to hit at least double-digit home runs and are going to hit some home runs in a big spot. But I think Elijah's is just going to come at the perfect time, whether it be a Big Ten tournament or a regional or at some point late in the season when they just need a home run and they need it in a big way. And Elijah's been in this conference. He had a big power boost last year. I expect it to come back again this year. And he's a guy that can be pretty reserved, but also can be really energetic.
Didn't he get tossed from the Georgetown game for a bat flip last year?
Exactly. He did. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. So if I had to guess right now, I'd say Elijah or Alex.
Yeah. I'm going to say either Eddie or Devin.
I think Eddie is a really solid guess.
Eddie's a good bet. He's going to hit a lot of homers, obviously. It's just interesting to think about because obviously pitchers aren't going to hit, but like last year, if we were giving out this award and we were including everyone, it would have been Jason Savkul. If that guy hit homers, the bat flips that would come out of him would be unbelievable. But I'm going to go with Eddie Hakopian and Devin Russell for my two most likely. I just think they're two pretty fired up guys. They're both going to hit a lot of homers and probably hit a lot of homers at big spots.
What pitcher this year do you think would have the best bat flip? I know my answer.
I don't know. We don't have anyone to the emotion level of Jason Savickle, but I think there might not be many people in the world.
See, I think the answer is obvious, actually.
Who are you going with?
Logan Ott.
Yeah. Well, that, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yep,
He would absolutely bat flip. He would throw that thing as high as he could.
He would. He absolutely would. I'd probably go with Ott too.
Yeah. Former outfielder. Yeah. So he's got hitting experience too.
If you've
listened
to the Maryland Baseball Network over the last couple of years, you've heard the tag Maryland outfielder Logan Ott instead of Maryland pitcher Logan Ott.
I'm glad we were able to get that under control.
Yes.
It was 2 years with the same intro, the same music, the same tags, all that, but I'm glad we were able to rehaul that. You heard it over the weekend, some new voices in between innings, some new music. I hope everybody's enjoying the new style for MBN. We also are debuting new graphics and some new audio content on social media.
We gotta give Benji a shout out.
Benji
first.
Kaufman. Our new graphics guy. Don't have an exact title for him yet, but...
Graphics guy is a good title.
Graphics guy is a great title, and he is killing it right now.
Awesome.
He actually just sent me the podcast graphic for that one we're recording right now.
Nice.
That will post the link with tomorrow when this goes out. So, shout out to Benji.
He's doing
a phenomenal job. He's going to continue doing a phenomenal job, and he's going to be a part of MBN for at least this year and next year. And then after we leave, I'm sure he'll stay on staff as well. But you put it here, if Logan Ott ever gets an at-bat this year and hits a home run, he's going to have an insane bat flip.
All right.
Newcomer of the year. This is so wide open, right? Because there's literally, you can do freshmen, you can do transfers, pitcher, hitter. It's such a wide open category. I've got no idea who I'm going to pick.
All right, so I guess I'm going to go first. I'm going to say Sam Honar. I just feel like having that lefty bat right in the middle of the lineup. He hit cleanup yesterday, knows the conference well, performed well at Iowa, had a pretty solid weekend. Obviously, that big stack fly on Friday night. I'm going to go Sam Honar based purely off of vibes.
I'm going to go based purely off of power and potential, and I'm going to go Chris Akopian. I think this is a guy that's going to hit 15 home runs this year, and he's probably going to get a lot of off-speed pitches, especially with teams seeing the film of the homer on Saturday versus Georgia Southern. But this is a guy that is going to continue to mash the baseball with the dimensions at the bob. If he can capitalize on the pitches he gets to hit, at home, he could easily hit 10 home runs in College Park alone, And then that's only 20 of your 54 games, I think, in the regular season. So yeah. You've got 31 more on the road or at neutral sites to get to 15. And I think if he can even get to 12, that would be enough to qualify him for newcomer of the year.
Absolutely.
But if I had to pick a pitcher, though.
I mean, Coster.
Coster, obviously, if we're going to say him for pitcher of the year, we're going to say him for – we can nominate him for newcomer of the year, too. I really liked what I saw from Joey McManus the other day.
He could be good.
Really good mix, mid-90s with his fastball. Maryland guy, so to have that connection to the state is huge. And a guy that maybe starts a couple of midweeks for you at some point this season. We saw him throw the four innings against Georgia Southern the other day. I think this is a guy that could be starting for Maryland, whether it be in the midweek or late in the weekend next year.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, this is not going to be an award. This is going to be the last one I do, and then I have one more thing I want to hit on after we wrap up awards. This is more of a prediction. How many ejections for Matt Swope this year?
So this is funny because he almost got tossed on Friday, and I was really nervous because I thought it was going to happen. Yeah. I didn't think the umpires were going to give him any slack and be like, you're gone, game one. Are we going to set a line, or are we trying to get
just get a number.
I think two.
Two, I think, is a good bet.
Two. I think two happens.
I'm going to say three.
Three.
Nothing basing that on.
I think it hurts that he's also in the third base coach's box.
Yes.
The fact that he'll already be on the field, especially if there's like a play at third base, he's already going to be right next to that umpire down the line. If there's a tag play, like the lone ejection last year for Rob Vaughn came on a play at third base, given Maryland was in the field then. But still, if something like that happens again, I think that could lead to an ejection. And then also, you never know with the balls and strikes.
You never know.
So I think two. And I think one happens in the next 2 weeks.
Very well.
Gets one out of the way early.
Mm-hmm. All right. The last thing I want to hit on, we saw the video that went a little bit viral. I'm not going to say very viral. Big Daddy Matt Swope, taken by our very own Nate Schwartz.
Thank you.
Posted
Thank
on
you.
The Terps Baseball. I don't know if you've seen this. I meant to text this to you. They used it on MLB Network.
Did they really?
They used it on MLB Network.
Oh, I did not
know
that.
Your video content is on MLB Network, my friend.
Wow. It's an honor, really, truly. I'm just doing my job.
The vibes around this team are fantastic, though.
That was such an amazing moment. Yeah. Just to capture that between Kev and Coach, it was just really heartwarming to see everything come together, right? The last decade he's been on the coaching staff, he gets the opportunity to be the head coach. And game one, the team claws back from a 3-0 deficit and to win it for him.
Yeah.
And get him that moment on the bus after the game. It was truly one of the most special moments for this program since we've been here.
Why was Kevin later on the bus than everyone? And how did you know to film it?
So actually, I was told to get my phone out and film it by the Director of Operations, Phil DePace. Shout out to you, Phil. Do so much for the team, so much for us. We can't thank you enough for all you do. He just told me to get my phone out and record the moment. I don't know why Kevin was the last on the bus. I guess I know his dad was there.
I think
some of his family, other than his dad, was there as well. So could have been talking with them.
And then
it could have been something. It was predetermined that if they win that game, that Kevin was going to be the last one on the bus and present Coach with the game ball. So just to have that moment be game one, night one, and have it be a comeback victory, what a moment. Mm-hmm. What a day. What a opening night. What a opening four games for this Dirty Terps 2024 team.
Yep, and what should be a very fun weekend, and you mentioned Phil, I have warned him I will be bringing my cowboy boots and my cowboy hat to Texas.
We expect nothing less from you, Jack.
Good.
Nothing less. Dirty Terps in Texas. You might see something like that in a graphic.
Ooh.
Over
Benji's cooking.
He's always cooking. We'll see that on Friday. But that will do it for episode 95 of the Maryland Baseball Network podcast. We'll be back next week recapping the Terps down in Texas this weekend, the Clayburgh Bank College Classic. Two midweeks next week on the docket for Terps baseball. Home on Tuesday against Georgetown, at VCU on Wednesday. So we might get a podcast episode on Thursday night instead of Thursday morning, or maybe Friday morning.
We'll see.
We'll see what happens. We're going to get one out every week this season, and we will talk to you next week. This has been episode 95 of the Maryland Baseball Network podcast.